Krishna never consorts with his illusory energy. Still, her connection is not entirely cut off from the Absolute Truth. When he intends to create the material world, the amorous pastime in which he engages by consorting with his own spiritual potency, Rama, by casting his glance at the diluting energy in the shape of sending his time energy, is an auxiliary activity. In other words, the main Mahavishnu's main, this is like Lord Chaitanya, like sometimes it's always like that. There's a name for it, I can't remember it. It's the primary and secondary cause. There's a name, Gona Vritti and Mukhya Vritti or something. Mukhya Vritti and Gona Vritti. Mukhya Karana and Gona Karana. Primary cause and secondary cause. Why Krishna comes? Well, the secondary cause is Yada Yadar Yadharmasya Glanirbhavati Bharata and all that Paritranaya, that Bhagavad Gita, protecting devotees, establishing Dharma. That's the secondary cause. So the primary cause is to show his past, his Braj pastimes, his Vrindavan Leela, and to engage in Leela and attract the conditioned souls, and to reciprocate with his devotees like Devaki and Vasudeva, etc. So just like Lord Chaitanya, there's a secondary reason and a primary reason. The secondary reason is that, well, it was around time, it was about time to inaugurate the Sankirtan movement. But that's done in every Kali Yuga, there's a Sankirtan movement. There's 1,000 Kali Yugas in one day of Brahma, right? Something like that, 1,000 Yuga cycles. So in 999, Gaur Narayan comes, the golden form of Lord Narayan. Not Rasaraj Mahabhav, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he comes in one of those 1,000 Kali Yugas, right? This is all, you know all this. So when he comes, you know, the secondary purpose, you know, for 1,000 Kali Yugas, that Gaur Narayan has done his work of, you know, Sankirtan, right? Kalo Hari Kirtanat, the Dharma and Kali Yuga. So he's not coming for Dharma Samstat. He's coming for Leela. He's coming to taste these three confidential inner reasons, right? This is the actual Mukhya Vritti or Mukhya Karana, why Lord Chaitanya came, because Krishna wanted to taste Radharani's love, experience, or glories. That's the primary thing he came and tasted. And he spent 24 years of his life, practically half his life, tasting it and swimming and diving in the ocean of the waves in Puri, which represent the waves of, you know, Mahabhav. So in the same way, the Lord, whenever the Lord is acting, his actions are not karma, it's Leela. He's not forced to act, he chooses to act by his sweet will, and it's a sweet play of the Absolute, or the divine play of the sweet Absolute, as Sridhar Swami used to say. So this is another play, and that this is Krishna in the form of Mahavishnu, because now we're approaching, you know, the material creation. Well, that's the whole, that creation is called Srishti Leela. And Madhvacharya, Balavacharya. Balavacharya sings that song about all the sweetness is Madharadi Paterakilam Madharam. Because everything is sweet about the Lord of Sweetness. So he says, Gopi Madharam, Gopa Madharam, Venu Madhara, Yamuna Madhara. Then he says, Srishti Madhara and Pralaya Madhara. He says, Srishti Madhara, Madharadi Paterakilam Madharam. He says, it's Srishti Madhara, your creation is very sweet. So we may not think it's very sweet because we sometimes swallow the bitter pill of material reality. Material reality sometimes leaves a very bitter and sour taste in the heart and mind. But nevertheless, Vallabhacharya, he depicted the creation of the Lord as a very sweet Srishti Madharam. This is a very sweet Leela of the Lord. So now this is, you know, we want to hear Leela Katha. And this is a little different nature of Leela. This is also Krishna Leela. This is a class for Rasikas who want to relish the Srishti Leela of the Lord and maybe have its different variety of taste. But you see that the basic primary action of whenever the Lord comes in this world, of course he's always in his own world, but sometimes he displays his world in his world, and sometimes he displays his world in our world. But it's always a Prakriti, it's always spiritual. It's always a spiritual world, whether it's in Boma Vrindavan, Brajabhumi, or whether it's in Brajagokul. So his activity is simply enjoying Shakti and Shaktiman. So this is what this verse basically says, that Mahavishnu wanted to enjoy with his consort, with his female expansion, his consort, Ramadevi, just like Krishna wants to enjoy with Radharani, Narayana wants to enjoy with Lakshmi. So this is Mahavishnu with his consort. Her name is Rama. It's a goddess of fortune, Rama. It's like when we're chanting Hare Krishna, it's not Hare Rama, Hare Rama. And maybe, but if you're chanting Hare Rama, then you may be getting something besides. You may be going to Vaikuntha with the goddess of fortune. It's Ram and the Rama, just like we say, Jaya Jaya Radhe, Jaya Jaya Sham, Jaya Jaya Sri Vrindavan. Then we say, Jaya Jaya Shama, Jaya Jaya Sham. So Shama, who's Shama? Radharani. And who's Sham? Krishna. So who's Ram? Krishna, or the Supreme Lord. And who's Rama? Sita. Sita's Rama, or the goddess of fortune. So this is the consort of Mahavishnu. Her name is Rama. So he basically says he intends to create the world, the amorous pastime in which he engages in consorting with his own spiritual potency. So he wants to enjoy, so he wakes up Ramadevi, he enjoys with Ramadevi, but then behind her he sees there's some other maidservant sleeping. It's like a king may have many queens. So he sees another one sleeping, but she's not so touchable. So but Ramadevi understands, oh, my husband, he wants to enjoy with this other personality, this other lady. It's called the deluding potency of Maya. But he has an Ichha Shakti, like we say, Shishrikshaya. He has a desire, he wants to enjoy, but he doesn't want to contact her, so I'll carry her desire. And then that's Shambhu, and then she expands, then Rama expands into Durga. And you'll hear something about this. It sounds a little bit confusing, but actually it's very easy. And the Acharyas give this poetic analogy, which we'll repeat again. It's just kind of a summary, what I just spoke, of what the class will be also. In purport. The illusory energy has no direct contact with Krishna. So energy means Shakti. And when you talk about Bhagavan, Swayam Bhagavan, or Bhagavan, you're talking about Shaktiman. Energy, potency, Shakti. All of these discussions of Shakti, energy, potency, are basically, for the most part, they're all female personalities. They're personified as female personalities, the Shaktis. So the illusory energy has no direct contact with Krishna, but has got indirect contact. So I put that, we put that in a different way. Krishna does not directly associate, or you can say Mahavishnu does not directly associate with the Maya potency. His relationship with her is only an indirect hint of association. Second sentence. Vishnu is the prime cause. In other words, Mahavishnu is the prime cause lying on the Karna Samudra, lying in the causal ocean. The plenary portion of Mahasankarshan, who has his seat in Mahavaikuntha, the sphere of Krishna's own extended transcendental pastimes, casts his glance towards the deluding energy. Mahavishnu glances at the Maya potency in the... Krishna glances at the Maya potency in the form of Mahavishnu, who lies in the causal ocean. Mahavishnu is a plenary portion of Mahasankarshana, Vaikuntha. And Vaikuntha is a plenary abode of Krishna. So you know that Krishna expands into Balaram, then Balaram and Krishna also, but he expands into the Chaturvyuha, right? So Balaram expands into Sankarshan, then Krishna becomes Vasudeva. So it's Vasudeva and Sankarshan Pradyumna Aniruddha, that's Chaturvyuha. Then that Sankarshan, it's called like Mool Sankarshan, then he expands into Mahasankarshan, which is mentioned here. Then from Mahasankarshan comes the Purusha avatars. beginning with Mahavishnu, who we're describing in this verse. And then Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, then Shiradakshaya Vishnu. Comes all the way down. It's from way up there, far, far away beyond the coverings of the universe, in the land of Viraja River and Mahavishnu. It comes from all the way up there, all the way down into our heart. And floating in our heart, floating in the ocean, the airs of our heart, floating in the causal ocean of our heart, is the Shiradakshaya Vishnu. He's also there, with his Rama, with his consort. Even in casting his glance, he has no contact with the deluding energy, because his spiritual chit potency, Rama, in other words, his potency, his chit potency, is personified as Rama, just like Krishna's Ladini Shakti is personified as Radharani, and Krishna's Sandini potency is personified as Balaram, right? So his chit potency, Rama. Then Rama carries the function of his glance as his unpolluted, ever-submissive potency. In other words, she's a submissive, chaste wife executing the will of her husband. It's as simple as that. That's what he said. In other words, Rama's his wife, and she's submissive. Okay, you want this thing done? Okay, I'll do it. Then the next sentence, the deluding, on page 19, the deluding energy as the maidservant of the spiritual potency, Rama, serves the manifested plenary portion of Godhead, consorted with Rama, the time energy, representing the force of activity and instrumentality of Rama. Hence there is found the process of masculinity or the creative force. So, now you understand that? Very clear. It's clear. So this can be also said like this. The external Maya, as the maidservant of Rama, engages in the service of the Lord's plenary portion, united with Rama. And the current of time is the supernatural power of Rama that accomplishes the work, the Kala Shakti. And thus, the predominant influence in the universal... I'm going to read some notes, kind of summarize the points of this perp word. So this verse, of course, describes Mahavishnu, and the basic idea of the glance is described here, Mahavishnu's glance. Of course, the specifics of that and the fine points of that we'll hear more about today and tomorrow also. So in this pastime of Mahavishnu, he glances over his consort Rama to arouse her when she is sleeping, because they're both sleeping in Yoga Nidra. It's called Yoga, you heard that term earlier, Yoga Nidra. Yoga Nidra, in one sense, Nidra means sleep, but for them it's Leela. So they're sleeping together, they've enjoyed together amorous or intimate pastimes as husband and wife, and the husband is woken up and he wants to enjoy, but the wife is still sleeping. So then he woke her up when she's sleeping. So when he wants to create, he glances over her also. But then Ramadevi expands herself, understanding his desire to manifest the material creation. Ramadevi expands herself into Durga. Remember I was talking about all the Shaktis or all expansions originally of Radharani? So Ramadevi is completely spiritual personality, the wife of Mahavishnu. But then, when Mahavishnu wants to have activities on the other side of the causal ocean and the material sphere, then she expands herself. He expands as a glance, but that's all. But she expands a complete form of herself known as Durga. Of course, he also expands, you can say. You'll find out also. In doing so, he does not actually make contact with her. There's a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, Chapter 5, verse 24. I read that. The Lord, the undisputed proprietor of everything, was the only seer. The cosmic manifestation was not present at that time, and thus he felt imperfect without his plenary and separated parts and parcels. The material energy was dormant, whereas the internal potency was manifested. Prabhupada's purport. The Lord is the supreme seer, because only by his glance did the material energy become active for cosmic manifestation. At that time, the seer was there, Mahavishnu. But the external energy over which the glance of the Lord is cast was not present. Mahavishnu felt somewhat insufficient, like a husband feeling lonely in the absence of his wife. This is a poetic simile given by the Acharyas. Mahavishnu wanted to create the cosmic manifestation to give another chance to the conditioned souls who were dormant in forgetfulness. The cosmic manifestation gives the conditioned souls a chance to go back home, back to Godhead, and that is its main purpose. The Lord is so kind that in the absence of such a manifestation, he feels something wanting, and thus the creation takes place. Although the creation of the internal potency was manifested, the other potency appeared to be sleeping. In other words, Rama was there, the internal potency, but the external potency, Bahiranga Shakti, appeared to be sleeping. And the Lord wanted to awaken her to activity. Just as a husband wants to awaken his wife from the sleeping state for enjoyment. Because I guess two wives, like Ramadevi and external. It is the compassion of the Lord for the sleeping energy that he wants to see her awaken for enjoyment, like the other wives who are awake. The whole process is to enliven the sleeping conditioned souls to the real life of spiritual consciousness, so they may thus become as perfect as the ever liberated souls in the Vaikuntha Lokas. Very interesting. This analogy is Vishnu Chakravarti part. It's purport in this Bhagavatam. So we may, it's like they say, the living entities in this material world are sleeping in illusion. That's why the Vedic aphorism in the Vedanta Sutras, Tamasimam Jyotirgama. Tamasimam Jyotirgama means you're in tamasi, you're in darkness, you're in ignorance, you're sleeping. Your spiritual life is dead. You're dead to spiritual reality. You're only just, all you know is eating, mating, sleeping, and defending. Tamasimam Jyotirgama. Go to the light of spiritual truth, the light of self-realization. Come to the side of this of eternal life, spiritual life, in the service of the Lord. So this same conception is there, that the Lord, the living entities that are within Mahavishnu, they're an illusion, they're covered in darkness, as Brahma was. Brahma is the first archetypal living entity. And when he appeared as the first living entity, he was totally in darkness also, and he had to come to the light. So he came to the light by receiving Diksha. By receiving Diksha from Divya Saraswati, he got the Gopal Mantra, then he did his Bhajana Kriya, then he had realization. So this whole thing is, you know, Jeev Jago, wake up, wake up. So in this verse is talking just some other, Durga, who is contacted by the glance, is material nature in the Pradhan state. And I'll explain that also. And when it's activated, it then comes to this, it becomes Mahatattva. Prabhupada, he compares the Lord's detachment to a flower and its fragrance. Rama carries the function of the glance. Durga, as a servant of the Lord, accepts the glance. In the glance is the Kala Shakti and the Icha Shakti and the Jiva Shakti. They're all there. Right, the two are mentioned. We'll hear about the other ones as we go on. That's in verse 10. In the glance is time factor, as it mentioned in the verse, Tyakta Kalam, Kala Shakti, representing the force of activity and instrumentality of Rama. And there is also the Jivas, compared later to pencils of effulgence from Mahavishnu. Like, glance is like a ray. A glance is a ray or an effulgence, like a ray of the sun. Sometimes it says when the sun is shining on you, the sun is glancing at you, or he's looking at you. So it's like a ray, it's a glance. So the glance of Mahavishnu is like a pencil ray of effulgence, or it's a glance, also a glance. So much is there. You see that this analogy of the glance, and even in, if you go into the level of, you know, from our level of interactions, from people, you know, men to women, men to men, women to women, or in the level of Krishna's Leela, so much is there just by glancing. So much communication, so much expression of will, so much expression of heart. And, you know, we talk about Ichha Shakti, which your desire is expressed just by the eyes. And our acharyas, they write whole songs about the sidelong glance of Krishna, Krishna Kripa Kataksh, and Radha Kripa Kataksh, right? Munindra Vrindabandha Techi Loka Shoka Harani. So the same thing is that just by the glance, everything, so much is in a glance. You know, they say that, you know, in a glance you can bless someone, in a glance you can curse someone, in a glance you can create something, in a glance you can destroy something. And you see throughout the Vedic literature, some rishis, like they look at someone and burn them to ashes, right? There's a story of Sagar, what's his king, Bhagiratha and his 60,000 sons or something. They were looking for some horse that was stolen, some challenge horse, and they came across Kapila Muni, right, in the Bhagavatam. And Kapila Muni was meditating, and they disturbed him. And there's different reasons given by acharyas, but he glanced at them, and just by his glance, he burned them all to ashes. So a glance can destroy. So Kapila Muni's glance at these 60,000 sages, they just became turned into ashes. And then Bhagiratha, he heard about his ancestors were turned into ashes, so he wanted to bring the Ganga down here. So Ganga called became known as Bhagirathi, another name for Ganga. I think it's the ninth canto of Bhagavatam. So now we're hearing about the glance of Mahavishnu. So now I want to go through this points, purport. Describing a little bit about Rama, and also something about Mahavishnu from Krishna book. Rama is Lakshmi, or the goddess of fortune. Mahavishnu is the first Purusha avatar of Krishna. And we described that already. And if you can read a very nice description in chapter 89 of the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 89, talking about how Mahavishnu arranged to have darshan of Krishna. You know, he stole the sons of the Brahmana in Dwarka. They were disappearing one after another, eight sons or something. And then Arjuna said, "Well, if I'll save this son, if I'll go to Yamaloka, I'll save him. Otherwise, my name is not Arjuna." But then, still, Mahavishnu snatched him. Arjuna was going to enter into the fire to give up his life according to his promise if he couldn't save the son of the Brahman. And Krishna said, "Wait a minute! Don't be so extreme. Let come with me." So then they went on their chariot and they went through the coverings of the universe. And it's a very nice Krishna book story. In the very early days, some of the Prabhupada's disciples, they recorded some Krishna book stories, only about maybe 3-4 tapes. And that's one of them, that Krishna takes Arjuna to see Mahavishnu. And a very nice tape, early days, we always used to listen to. So there, if you read that Bhagavatam, you'll see so many discussions about these different energies of Mahavishnu, his different potencies. And you kind of see how what's within Mahavishnu, his energies and powers, you also see reflected in the demigods that are running the universe. So this describes Mahavishnu Loka, wherein Mahavishnu resides. You can read about that in chapter 89, in the causal ocean. From Mahavishnu's body exhale so many golden seeds of universes. And he's surrounded by his personal associates, Narada, Nanda, Sunanda, and the personification of the chakra. The chakra is also a person, Sudarshan chakra. And all of his energies, his 16 different energies, are mentioned also. Like Pushti, which is nourishment, Shri, which is beauty and opulence, Nila, his pastimes, Aja, which is creation, Tushti, satisfaction, and Kirti, fame. These energies are also invested in the demigods to some degree. So the same energies that Mahavishnu has, these 16 potencies, he also kind of gives a portion of them to the demigods so that they can establish. And that's what people do. People want to get fame, or they want to get fortune, so they worship different demigods to get these potencies. They want to be a famous person, so they worship Kirti Ma, or these different, all these demigoddesses. But actually, if they worship Krishna or Vishnu, they can get whatever they want. That's why Vishnu Chakravartipati explains that one of the anarthas in Anartha Nivritti, when one worships Krishna, Radha and Krishna, then he, what it brings with it, he gets artha, because dharma artha kama moksha. Whenever you perform dharma, you get some artha. Artha means some objects. They may be desirable or not. And for a devotee, he wants to become a kinshana. He doesn't want anything in this material world. But by performing bhakti, or the dharma, of Bhagavad Dharma, right? We say Bhagavad Dharma, by worshipping Krishna specifically, then we get these objects. And Vishwanath says, Madhurya Kundamani, and he compares these, Taranga, Bhakti Taranga. There's like your bhakti is like a bhakti rasamrita sindhu. It's like an ocean of devotion. But on that ocean, there's so many waves that may come. And some of those waves are like profit, adoration, fame. You'll get fame, you'll get fortune, you'll get followers, you'll get position, all these different things. So these are what people worship these different demigods for, that have these potencies which they receive from Mahavishnu. Because they're all personified and standing all around. These 16 potencies are standing around Mahavishnu waiting to serve him. Because he is, you know, Sadaishwarya Purna. He has unlimited fame, unlimited power, renunciation, wealth, beauty, etc. So bhakti, it brings also these things. But then we have to always be reminded of Lord Chaitanya, no, that's not what I want. But some people, they enter the ocean of bhakti, and these waves come to them, and then they catch the wave and ride it home, so to speak. Instead of staying on the ocean and going back to Godhead, they catch a wave of pratishtha, a wave of fame, name, of fortune, followers, men, women, whatever. And they, oh yeah, oh this is nice. Oh, Krishna is so merciful. Look what Krishna gave me. And they catch that wave from the ocean of bhakti, and then they ride it back to the shore of the ocean of birth and death. And they stay in the samsara. So we have to be expert at, you know, crossing over the waves. Expert swimmer in the ocean of bhakti. And, you know, pass those waves by, you know, like when a big wave comes, you see people at the beach, they go under, you know, they go under and let it go over. If you try to stand like that, bam, you know, you're on your back. So the smart swimmer, he either out swims fast over the top or he goes underneath. So we don't want to get caught by these waves. We want to submerge ourselves. Gopi Bhava Rasamritabdi Lahari Kalola Magna Mohur. Six Goswamis taught, don't take a ride, don't catch a wave of this bhakti fame and, you know, these bhava tarangas, or these bhakti tarangas, but we should, gopi bhava rasa, we should, kalola magno mohara, we should submerge ourselves in the ocean of bhakti. So we're describing Mahavishnu. These different energies are also invested in the demigods. To some degree. All these are there in personified form, engaging in service to Mahavishnu. It's now the basis of material creation. Material creation begins with the Lord's desire, and we already, this is a repeat basically, but it's a poetic simile to understand that Mahavishnu glances over his sleeping energy, which is his wife, Rama or Lakshmi. Then he engages in pleasure pastimes with his wife. But Mahavishnu saw that the material energy was also sleeping, and he wanted her to be active, so he glanced at her. This is the second reason for the material creation. So the first reason, the Mukhya Karana, was he just in joy with Rama. And the second reason was his Dharma. This yada yada yadharmasya, to establish dharma. Oh yeah, actually I have all these living entities inside of me. I almost forgot about them. Oh, they're stuck up over there. Maybe we should give them a chance to also engage in Leela with me, because they're in a dormant state, like a sleeping state. Just as Ramadevi was sleeping and he wanted to engage in Leela with her, and then the material energy was sleeping and he wanted to engage in Leela with her, and the jivas were sleeping within him and he wanted to engage in Leela with them. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in Jiva Dharma this whole creation, and the jivas, the Nityavada jivas, they're engaged in a great Leela with Krishna. Where the Nityamukta jivas are, of course, in Leela, in particular Ras with the Lord. So we're also in a Leela with the Lord. This is also his Leela. He describes that, why the purpose for material creation, to engage in Leela with the Jiva Shakti, just like the spiritual world is there to engage in Leela with the Ladini Shakti, or with the Samvit Shakti, or Sandini Shakti, and all these different energies and Shaktis, Tushti Shakti. So there's also a Shakti called the Jiva Shakti, but there's two kinds of Jiva Shaktis, Nitya Mukta and Nitya Bhada, right? So now all of his Shaktis, Shaktiman wants to have Leela with all his Shaktis. So we're in a Leela with the Lord. But the embrace of the Lord, and this Leela, the embrace of the Lord sometimes hurts, or it's sometimes a little painful. So we want to enter into the internal embrace and leave the external embrace. So the second reason for the material creation is that Mahavishnu, that within himself were so many living entities who are not engaging in pleasure pastimes with him in the spiritual world. Therefore, to allow them to live out their karma from past creations, Mahavishnu wanted to impregnate them into Maya and then return them and bring them to the spiritual world and participate in transcendental pastimes with him. So in summary, there's two purposes of the material creation: to awaken Maya for her function of, you know, enjoyment with her husband, and to awaken Maya for her function, the external energy, and to fulfill the karma of the conditioned souls and bring them back to Godhead. So that's the base of the material creation. It's the nature of Mahavishnu's glance. The Lord never has any direct contact with Maya. God has a transcendental, completely spiritual senses which are interchangeable. Angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti. Any part of his transcendental body can do any function. He can have sex with his eyes just by a glance. Right? He can eat with his ears, he can eat with his eyes. Like Prabhupada said, the Bajari comes there and he puts the plate and he offers his love and devotion to Krishna. Then he says, hey, wait a minute. It's all still there. He didn't eat anything. He has to, you know, take bites out of everything, and it has to be an empty plate. Then I can understand that he ate. But he's not like us. Krishna's not like us. He can eat with his mouth or not eat with his mouth. He can just glance at it and eat with his eyes, because his senses are interchangeable. So now this is an interesting thing, another explanation to remind us of how everything begins from Krishna or Radha and Krishna and expands. Krishna expands in so many forms, and Srimati Radharani also expands in so many forms. They are always together in various different forms. Actually, understanding the Brahma Samhita is very easy. Understanding the whole Siddhanta of Vaishnavism is very easy if one understands this predominated moiety and predominator moiety. If you understand Radha and Krishna Tattva, then all these things you'll understand. Because that's the Acharya simply explained everything from this point. They are always together in various different forms, Shakti and Shaktiman. There's no question of Shaktiman without Shakti, and no question of Shakti without Shaktiman. Radha expands to become Rama. Understanding her husband, Mahavishnu's desire, Rama awakens his other wife, known as Maya. So Rama carries the purpose of Mahavishnu's glance. How does she do that? Rama accomplishes this in the form of the time factor, Kala Shakti. Radha Rani is Sarva Shakti Mayi. She's He's the supreme, unlimited reservoir of all potencies or powers or shaktis. Mahavishnu's glance travels via the Kala Shakti, or time factor. Right? That's what the verse says. By means of the time factor, Ramadevi takes the living entities who desire material activities and delivers them into the material energy Maya. The material energy is a maidservant of the spiritual energy. Mahavishnu's primary wife is his spiritual energy in the form of Ramadevi. An awaiting maidservant is the deluding energy called Mayadevi. The Kala Shakti, or the time factor, represents the force of activity and the instrumentality of the force of Brahma. So these three potencies combine in creation. Icha Shakti, Jnana Shakti, Kriya Shakti, and Kala Shakti. So Icha Shakti means the will of the Lord. That's what they say in the verse, the instrumentality. You know, it's there, it says the instrumentality. That word instrumentality means the will, the Icha. God's willpower, right? Willpower, thinking, feeling, willing. We also have willpower. We have thinking, feeling, then we will and something happens, maybe. Man proposes, God disposes. But whatever Krishna wills, automatically it happens. And Jnana Shakti is the knowledge potency of the Lord. And Kriya Shakti is the force of activity. And so these first two, Icha Shakti and Jnana Shakti, they represent the Kala. They're combined in the time factor, which carries the living entities from Mahavishnu to Shambhu. Tomorrow is discussion of Shambhu. Okay, any questions on that one? Yeah.
Sometimes they say that time is a representative.
Well, everything is a representative of Krishna. It's like in the spiritual world, the question is that time is representative of Krishna, but here it seems that Kala is a Shakti, so she's female, so how does she represent Krishna?
Is she male or female?
She's Shakti. If you want to say maleness and femaleness, maleness means Shakti. Shaktiman is maleness, or Purusha, or enjoyer. And then femaleness means Prakriti, or Shakti, or the enjoyed. So these are the two basic principles. And they have names, but they're equally powerful. There's no question, there's no Shaktiman without Shakti. And there's Shakti, there must be a controller, the wielder of the Shakti, and that's Shaktiman, the source of the Shakti. So Krishna, just like in the spirit, in Braja Gokul, there is no time. But Radharani's there, the potent Sarva Shakti Mayin's there. So time is conspicuous by its absence there. So time is, Krishna says, time I am. But, well, wait a minute. If you're time and you're in the spiritual world, why? What happened now? Why is there no time? You say in the Bhagavad Gita, Kalasmi, I am time. But then in the spiritual world, in the Brahma Samhita, it also says there's time is not there. So what's going on? So in the spiritual world, it's spiritual time. Spiritual time means there's a spiritual sun and a spiritual moon and spiritual stars, and the sun rises and it falls, and it seems like it's night, and then it's day, and there's morning, and there's afternoon, and there's evening, and there's seasons, and there's six different seasons. Sometimes they're all happening at the same time in one forest, or sometimes there's one season in one forest after the other, and sometimes the whole of Vrindavan is going from one season to the other to the other. And so that's all, and that's a time function. Seasons are a time function. And rising and setting of the sun and moon are time functions, and day and night are time functions. So all these things are there. Astakali Alila, Astakal. Radharani's name is, one of Radharani's name is Ashtapriya. Ashtapriya. She's very fond of number eight. She's born on the eighth day, Ashtami. Her boyfriend's born on the eighth day, Ashtami. And she's surrounded by the Ashtasakis. And she plays throughout eight periods of the day. Right? Ashtapriya. It's one of the thousand names of Radharani. So there's different leelas. Nishant leela, Nisha leela, Nishant leela. Pratek Lila, Purvan Lila, Amadhyan Lila, Apurvan Lila, Pradosh Lila, Shayan Lila, Nisha Lila, right? Throughout the day. Like right now, what Lila is now? 3:36 to 6. This is Pradosh Lila, when Krishna brings the cows back, and it's a hot day, he goes to Pavan Sarovar and bathes, and then he milks the cows, and then he goes into have some dinner, and then there's joking and all kinds of things in the assembly, in the theater, and his father's theater, they have all kinds, so this is nighttime. Then he's, oh, it's night, it's tight, oh, it's late, my boy is sleepy, then it's Shayan Lila, then he takes rest, right? Then Nisha, in a deep, dark night, when everybody's sleeping, Krishna sneaks out of his room through a trap door, little secret door, and he comes out, little cave, and he comes out of Nandagaon, out of the side of the mountain, onto an unknown secret pathway, and he goes off to Vamshivat. That's deep in the dark night. So, and then Radharani, and sometimes in the full moon, when it's full moon, she wears a white dress, and when it's a dark moon, she wears a dark blue dress, so she changes her dress according to the change of time and moon and whatever. So time is definitely there, but it's in a different feature. It's expanding and nourishing everything. It's not diminishing and destroying everything. Krishna says in Gita, time I am, and I've come to destroy, I am the destroyer, right? Time destroys everything. For one who is born, death is certain. Time takes away everything. But in the spiritual world, time enhances everything. Time is always there, playing a sweet tune in the background like an orchestra. An orchestra has so many different instruments, and there may be primary instruments that are prominent sounding, but there's so many fine strings in the background and fine piano, but the timpani drum and the horns may be prominent, but in the background are the strings and the harps. So in the background of the spiritual world is always the time factor, nourishing and sweetening everything with its progress and influence. Now it's time to say goodbye.